This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Twitter has accepted Elon Musk's takeover bid. What changed and what it will mean for the social media giant. And lawmakers are back in Washington this week. Why Democrats are racing to get through their agenda.
They feel across the ideological spectrum that they need to do more. They are concerned that voters don't see them as doing enough. They have majorities in the House, the Senate, and the White House, and they're worried about that.
Plus, when should parents start talking to their kids about the cost of college? It's Monday, April 25th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Elon Musk, the world's richest man, is buying Twitter for approximately $44 billion. The company announced today that shareholders will receive $54.20 a share in cash. That's a 38% premium over the stock price on the day before Musk disclosed his 9% stake in the company. The news marks a turnaround for Twitter, which just over a week ago had sought to prevent Musk from increasing his stake. We report that the two sides worked through the night to iron out a deal. Our mergers and acquisitions reporter, Carol Lombardo, says in the end, it came down to financing.
I think it was more like he shocked the board by actually coming up with the money to pay for it. That was a big question. When he first made the bid 11 days ago now, you know, a week later, he showed up with the money ready to go. The other point was that Twitter, meanwhile, was doing its own analysis, trying to figure out, hey, what does our path look like if we go it alone? And the bankers came back with valuation work that suggested, you know, it may not be easy to reach his price or higher in the near future, just based on how market conditions are changing, with the stock market going down and that falling especially hard on tech stocks. So it was a variety of factors, all kind of convening at the same time, that led Twitter to reexamine its offer and to go to the table.
In a news release, Musk called Twitter a digital town square where matters, quote, vital to the future of humanity are debated. He promised new features for the social media company, like making algorithms open source and defeating spam bots. But Kara says there are still a lot of questions over how the deal will change the platform.
Elon Musk has made no secret of what he'd like to see on Twitter. A lot of the changes more about content moderation and even simple things like making tweets longer than they are currently. And we don't really know what his business plan is. It's been heavy on details around kind of his vision for it, light on details in terms of how the business itself could change.
Shares of Twitter, which were halted when the deal was announced, closed the day up 5.7% at $51.70 a share. And just to note, the Wall Street Journal's publisher Dow Jones has a commercial agreement to supply news through Twitter. In the broader market, stocks opened lower today after Chinese markets suffered their worst sell-off in more than 2 years over fears that the country's strict COVID-19 policies will further disrupt global supply chains. But the major U.S. indexes flipped in afternoon trading to end the day higher. The Dow was up 0.7%, the Nasdaq gained 1.3%, and the S&P 500 rose 0.6%. Ukraine is asking the United Nations to guarantee a corridor for civilians to leave a steel plant in the besieged city of Mariupol and ensure that the UN and the Red Cross are present. The Ukrainian deputy prime minister said last week that about 1,000 civilians and 500 wounded soldiers were sheltering there. Efforts to evacuate civilians have been slow and often get called off due to continued Russian shelling. Russia's Ministry of Defense has said that their forces were ceasing fighting to allow civilian evacuation. Meanwhile, Russia says it is expelling 40 German diplomats in a reciprocal act after Berlin threw out Russian diplomats. Other European countries say they're following suit and kicking out scores of Russian officials over national security threats, citing spying and influence operations. And defense officials from more than 20 countries, including U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and NATO Secretary Jens Stoltenberg, are set to meet at a German airbase tomorrow. They'll discuss Ukraine's battlefield situation, security assistance to Kyiv, and whether the country should shift towards standard NATO ammunition and military equipment. A New York judge is holding former President Donald Trump in contempt of court and fining him $10,000 a day for failing to comply with a subpoena issued by State Attorney General Letitia James. Her office is conducting a civil fraud investigation into whether Trump and his company, the Trump Organization, made false or misleading statements to tax authorities, banks, and insurers. Trump's lawyers have argued that some of the materials requested did not exist, but the judge said they had not shown attempts to comply with the subpoena. Trump has denied wrongdoing and called James's investigation politically motivated. And just over 2 years after recording its first COVID-19 death, the U.S. is about to cross a new threshold, 1 million deaths related to the disease, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The pandemic's toll has been concentrated among the elderly, especially those in nursing homes. Black and Hispanic households have also experienced high mortality rates. But epidemiologists say the true death count is likely higher because some cases may have gone undiagnosed. Coming up, Democrats in Washington have plenty on their plate. How much will they be able to accomplish before November? And will it be enough to prevent big losses in the midterms? That's after the break.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Congress is back on Capitol Hill this week, and Democrats are hoping to tick off some of the boxes on their agenda. Lawmakers are expected to take up everything from COVID-19 aid to student loan debt. Democrats are urging action on big-ticket items, including President Biden's $2 trillion health care, education, and climate change bill, which stalled in the Senate late last year. But struggles within the party persist, throwing into question whether they can deliver and whether it will be enough to prevent significant losses to Republicans in the November midterms. Joining me now with more on this is Wall Street Journal politics reporter Eliza Collins. Hi, Eliza. Thanks for being here.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the biggest agenda item, the $2 trillion Build Back Better plan. West Virginia's Joe Manchin, who opposed that legislation, is now pushing for a compromise on new climate legislation. So where do we stand? What are Democrats now looking at to push through some of this broader agenda? Is it breaking it into pieces? What's going on?
So Democrats are basically looking at passing whatever Joe Manchin is okay with, and that's where they are. Manchin was the single no vote in the Democratic caucus. It's a 50-50 Senate. They needed his vote. So he has said he is interested in some climate provisions, some things related to prescription drug costs. So they're working on trying to figure out what that looks like. Manchin is, of course, very concerned about inflation, so they'll need to figure out how to address that. It does not look like it'll include anything related to childcare, which is a huge Democratic priority. They had hoped for a lot more on climate. So they're looking like they'll just have to give those parts up. And this still is not a guarantee, but it does appear that this is kind of Democrats' last chance to move something on this.
And you mentioned inflation. How important is it for Democrats to unite on how to address consistently high prices? It's a key issue among voters right now who are paying more for almost everything, including energy.
Yes, inflation is a huge issue, and they're going into a midterm where it's looking really difficult for them. They definitely look like the underdogs. They're going to have to figure out a message to address inflation. They appear to be at least acknowledging it's happening, but it's difficult because it's not necessarily going down. I talked to Dave Wasserman, who's the nonpartisan editor of the Cook Political Report, and he basically said Democrats are in trouble unless independents feel better about inflation. Independents are the group that really decide these elections. And right now, they're concerned about inflation, and they see these big spending packages as leading to inflation. So even if Democratic voters are excited about them, you've got to win independents.
There's also a disagreement among Democrats over who exactly should take action on certain issues, whether that should be Congress or the president through executive action. And this debate is front and center when it comes to federal student loan debt. Can you explain where the major disagreements are on this issue?
Democrats really across the ideological spectrum feel like they need to do more. They see these midterms, they're nervous about them, they want to pass more legislation. There's pretty broad agreement over some of this, things like pieces of that Build Back Better package, climate change, lowering the cost of prescription drugs. Where we see some differences is basically in the progressives versus moderates. Progressives want bigger spending. They want to see the party do more. They know the realities of Congress. And so something like eliminating student loan debt, that's not going to make it through Congress because of Republican opposition, but also from opposition from some centrist Democrats. So they are pushing the president to enact some executive orders, including eliminating student loan debt. Now, Biden talked about eliminating $10,000 of student loan debt in his campaign. Since then, he has not committed. He's basically said he's looking into this. He's considering. Our reporting shows his own advisors are divided over this issue. So it's really not a guarantee that this happens, but progressives are pushing him to take his own action to be able to move that forward. They say the base needs something to get excited about in order to show up in November.
Let's talk about another big agenda item, coronavirus aid. Republicans and Democrats have yet to reach an agreement on another round of aid, and a major issue falling in the middle of this is a controversial immigration policy that dates back to the Trump administration. How is that coming into play now?
So there has been bipartisan agreement in the Senate on a COVID aid bill, a $10 billion package, but an unrelated policy about basically a pandemic era Trump policy, actually, that allowed the administration to turn away people at the border because of the COVID pandemic. The Biden administration said that that can expire in May. Now, that has actually divided the Democratic caucus. Progressives say it's about time. They feel that it is not an okay policy and they're ready to see it go. A lot of centrist Democrats, including some in border states such as Arizona, are worried that the administration is going to let this policy expire and there'll be a surge of illegal immigration. And so they are pushing back on the administration. So Republicans are hoping that these centrist Democrats who are concerned will join them in amending the unrelated COVID bill to basically keep this policy, it's called Title 42, in place. Now, Democrats have said they're open to it. They want to see what this amendment looks like. This is a real headache for the White House, and it does delay this COVID bill, which they say is, you know, needs to happen right away to make sure that the U.S. is prepared for further surges.
Eliza, threaded throughout all of these issues, various issues that we've been talking about, of course, is an eye on the midterms. How consequential will it be for Democrats to get action on some of these issues we've been discussing ahead of those elections?
Well, they say it's extremely important. They feel across the ideological spectrum that they need to do more. They are concerned that voters don't see them as doing enough. They have majorities in the House, the Senate, and the White House, and they're worried about that. Now, there's a lot of things going against them. One of them is just history. The first midterm after a president takes office, his party tends to lose seats. There's also, you know, record high inflation. Biden's numbers are, quite frankly, terrible. His polling numbers, the generic ballot, which basically says, would you vote for a Republican or a Democrat right now, does favor Republicans. So Democrats have a lot to do. They're hoping that passing legislation will move the needle. But, you know, behind the scenes, some definitely acknowledge that doesn't necessarily fix everything. It might just blunt some of the biggest losses.
That's Wall Street Journal politics reporter Eliza Collins. Eliza, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, as we just talked about, student debt is a hot button issue. College can become a financial burden, not just for students, but also for their families. All this week, we're going to be talking about how to manage that debt on our WSJ sister podcast, Your Money Briefing, starting with when families should start talking about the cost of college and who's going to foot the bill. Here's our higher education reporter, Melissa Korn.
So I think as soon as a student, this is assuming, you know, it's a high school student going straight into college, as soon as a student is starting to think about what schools they're interested in, maybe what campuses they want to go visit, what websites they're visiting to learn more about particular schools, that's when the conversation should happen. Not spring of senior year when the acceptance letters have come in, but ideally spring of junior year, perhaps even earlier, talking through, here's how much, you know, dad and I have saved up, or we have a 529 that your grandparents helped put some money into, but it won't really cover that much. Or, you know, we expect you to have some skin in the game and we're not taking on the entire burden. Those sorts of things, kind of big picture talks, can be really useful.
You can hear more about paying for college, financial aid, loans, and repayments all this week on Your Money Briefing. And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Hurtoli for The Wall Street Journal.